Blog Talk Radio.
I guess afternoon, everybody, to our special World of Ink Network show here on Blog Talk Radio. It's Friday, September 7th, 2012. It is 11 a.m. Mountain, so we are looking at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific. This is one of your hosts, V.S. Grenier, and of course, joining me as well is Marcia Casper Cook. Hello, Marcia. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you doing? We haven't done a show together in a long time, in a while.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
It's been like a month. And I wasn't sure what music you were going to play, and then when I realized it was the good story.
You made it longer, right. You made it longer.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay.
I'm like, that
was
a lot. So
I know. I know. I've been on so much, I can't even tell you. I don't, you know. But it's good
yeah.
to be back.
Yeah, so we're excited because it's the two of us, and like Marcia said, we haven't done a show with the two of us for a while, so we're excited this Friday. See, I am so sick. It feels like Monday. I'm so out of it. this Friday, we're excited to be here in September and to talk with you guys, like always, with tips and information in this crazy world we call publishing. A few announcements
it's really
quickly.
True.
Yeah, a few announcements before we get started. It's been slowly getting out about Stories for Children magazine, which is one of the divisions that that is a part of the whole entire Stories for Children publishing company. Stories for Children magazine, just so our listeners know and that are listening right now and later on demand, is not 100% closing. I know that people are only reading half of what is actually being said, and so they're running around going, oh my gosh, it's closing. No, the magazine itself is not putting out any more issues after the back-to-school issue releases this coming Monday. So Stories for Children magazine isn't going to be gone as a website or as a social platform for teachers and parents and homeschoolers to share information and even as us sharing information with you. It's just no more future issues will be published. We're actually going to be focusing in a different direction. So, and more on that will be announced as time comes. But the back-to-school issue of 2012 is the last issue, but Stories for Children magazine is still around. Stories for Children publishing is still around.
Because you do all your tours.
The World of Ink tours are still around. World of Ink Network, we're still around. We're not going anywhere. We'll still be doing our shows and all of what we do. So it's just no more future issues will be actually put out, just so you guys know. And, Marsh, did you have a few announcements? I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, yeah, we have the Romance Week next week, which is going to be the tagging, sharing, and liking, all the things that I always say I don't really love to do. It does work, though, for these things. So that's why we're holding an event. It's a romance event, and it's for readers, writers, publishers. It's for everybody that they can call in, they can share, they can tag, and we're inviting people. And it's Bethany Cross and William Maltese. The three of us will be hosting the show, and it's going to be probably a crazy house because that's how we do it. And William has agreed to come on with us, and so we're happy about that. And he's got 195 books. He's done romance. He's done gluten books. He's done he owns a chocolate company. He's done a lot. And Bethany has done, with Rebelling Press, she's done three short story books. And I have, from my books, my children's, my Holocaust survivor, and I also am in now the romance market. I'm on my second Mrs. Templeton book, and it just came out actually last night, this morning. It's on, I put it out there, and it's Never Enough. And it's another short one. I have one more to go for the series. And I'm loving it. And so that's what we're going to do next Tuesday night at 8 o'clock Central, 9 Eastern. And then we're going to hold it over until Wednesday, Wednesday night also another show, and maybe on Friday. There's so many people that we want to have on and just to have a good time. And it's open to readers, writers, publishers, reviewers, everybody in the romance field, because we'd love to hear from readers if we could. That's really what we'd like to hear, because we want to hear what everybody says about all of this. And we hope to have some male writers that are doing, you know, romance, and William was one of them, and there's a lot of them out there, so call us up at 714-242-5259, and you can come in and talk to us, and we're going to have a really good time, and it's going to be fun. That's what people are doing now, logging and sharing, you know, they're sharing and tagging.
Exactly. Yeah. And talking about sharing, something that we're doing at the World of Ink Network is, you know, people who want to share services they offer or have a book come out, you know, publishers that are open to submissions, definitely contact us at theworldofinknetwork.com. We have a contact us form you can fill out, and we do have where you can sponsor our shows and run an ad during our shows to get the word out there. So if you don't have a lot of money, or you just want to, you know, test the market that you're not sure is the, you know, the right market you're trying to reach, this is a great way to do that. So
you know, maybe we should say one thing. That what's interesting is that, you know, when we started with Blog Talk, you know, we've done, Virginia and I have done shows together for 2.5 years. We did it with Red River, and then we do it now with World of Ink. And they're featuring us a lot, and we have a lot of people listening to our shows. And we have Fran Lewis that does a show with us, the reviewer, Fran Lewis. And we also have J.D. Holliday and Christy Condaleo, and that's, you know, and we have your show, too. Your other show.
Yeah, we have
Your Family Matters, you know.
Family Matters and the Writing Mom and the Stories for Children show. And we don't just, you know, we don't just run the sponsored ad only on here on the Blog Talk, you know, network page for us. We also put it on our website and on our blog. So it does get out there and people do see it. And we do want to thank Kalo Publishing, because they have taken us up on that offer and have sponsored quite a few of our shows and do help sponsor our website. So, you know, they've been very happy with the response and click-throughs that they've gotten, you know, from partnering with us through that sponsorship. So it's been a fun ride. And then what else was I going to share about?
Yeah, because we haven't been here together to share all the things that we've been doing, you know, and I think that people, when they do advertise with us, I think it's a really good thing. And Blog Talk has become huge. I mean, there's thousands of shows on, you know, because we get all the, you know, a lot of times, I'm sure you get it too, with all the emails of all the shows coming on. There's a ton of shows, you know, and we're on Pinterest and Facebook. I mean, everybody's going together and moving in, and everybody's everywhere.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but on Facebook, we do actually have a fan page, a World of Ink Network fan page, and a group page, which is World of Ink Hangout, that you can, you know, follow what we're doing, of course, on the fan page. And in the group, World of Ink Hangout, is a great place to, you know, to really, again, you know, share about what you have going on and get information from others that are they're in the publishing and writing and script writing and ad market. So, because it's, and I think we even have book reviewers and critics on there as well. So there's a lot of people that, you know, that we harness as a group together to share information, because as you all know, that's what we're really about. And by the way, Marcia, I know we were talking earlier, Blog Talk is featuring our show today, so we are a featured show.
Okay, good. Oh,
again,
that's great.
Today, so thank you, Blog Talk. Yes, I caught it right before I came in.
Oh, really good. Okay, that's good. You know,
studio,
this is really what it's about, and, you know, they've been really good about this. We've been featuring our shows because, you know, and we have really good shows, and today we have a great show. I mean, Barbara Rogan is coming on the show, and she has done a lot of things. She's going to answer a lot of questions that people have, and it's going to be really interesting because she has been there, done that, and she's going to come out in a minute, and she's going to tell everything about it. Everything she's done. And these are the questions we get, but we should say one thing. We're trying to help people get to the right places. So if they need some help on social marketing, we have some people now that are using ourselves. And because neither Virginia or I give out names if we don't use them first. So we try, and we're doing that with social marketing because in the networking, I know a lot of people are having a lot of issues and they can't spend all day doing this. So I think what's happening is we're trying to find people where we can get you affordable prices, because we know sometimes it's very expensive for PR. So either ask Virginia or myself or email us, you know, at Michigan Avenue Media or World of Ink Network, and we'll help you because we know we've been trying a lot of different things, and it's working. So, okay, and then let's
yes.
Barbara.
We want to bring Barbara in, but we also want to let you all know, Barbara was just sharing with us, besides she's, you know, the fact that she's been established in this industry for a very long time, and being a literary agent, specializing with American and European publishers and agents of the Hebrew language rights, and she's done a lot. She has, I can't remember how many books. I think it was 3 books that are being re-released in ebook and in print.
The ebooks,
so,
right.
So she's not just somebody that is sitting on one side of the desk. She's from both sides of the desk, which is what
right.
makes this such a great show because, you know, she really understands both points of view when it comes to this industry. So welcome to the show, Barbara. We're
Hi.
Glad to have you here.
Thrilled.
Hi, thank you. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Where can we start with you? Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, that you want people to know about you because you've got so much to offer.
Well, as you said just a moment ago, I've worked in publishing my whole career in various positions. I started out working for a large publisher in New York, Fawcett Books, which was then one of the top 3 paperback publishers. Then I moved to Israel. I worked for an Israeli publisher for a short while, and then I started my own literary agency. And I ended up representing many of the top American and European publishers and agents for the sale of Israeli rights, which gave me entree to also try and sell books to them. So I began representing Israeli writers as well. So that I did for a good 13, 14 years. And all the time I was writing myself, and I started publishing. My first book came out with Doubleday and Weidenfeld and Nicholson in England, and it came out in Israel at the same time. So I was off to an exciting start. And eventually I had to choose between my 2 careers, writing and agenting, and I chose to pursue writing, much to the astonishment of my colleagues in the publishing business, who thought that
I can certainly understand that.
We both can. Marsha and I both have come to that crossroads ourselves.
Absolutely. I remember walking through the book expo in New York 1 year, telling people that I was leaving the agency and I was going to focus on my own novels, and they would just look at me like, what happened? Well, why would you do that? It's such an uncertain world to be a novelist as opposed to running a business, which by then was pretty big and well-respected. So it was a strange choice, but I followed my heart, and I'm glad I did it.
I think you did a good thing.
I think so, too. And trust me, I understand that because that's part, you know, a lot of people have asked me about why we're not doing any more feature issues of Stories for Children magazine. And, you know, I'm a mother of 3, and I write myself. And, of course, you know, with Marsha, you know, we both are doing the World of Ink Network, plus I run the Stories for Children side, which is just, you know, the children's and young adult side on my own. You know, and I do have people there that do help me, but it's just so much, and I was just like, my own writing was suffering, and my family was suffering. I'm like, I have to start cutting stuff off to focus on my family and my writing, because, I mean, those are who I am, more than the business. So I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah, you have to have priorities. I was starting a family at the same time, and it was really 3 jobs that I was juggling, and so I had to cut it down to 2. And, you know, nobody wanted the kids, so, you know,
my son is grown, but I used to write all the, you know, when he was in school and when I was going, and I did workshops then, and I did a lot of things. But then you do have to make that choice sometimes, because when you write, you really have to focus.
And I stayed involved with publishing anyway, because I teach writers, go to conferences. I've just done a lot along the way, so I've sort of kept one foot in that world.
Now, when you do you have internet classes, or do you? How do you?
I teach online.
We talked about that. Right, that's what I thought.
I teach online.
I started out
teaching at colleges near where I live on Long Island, and I taught at Hofstra and SUNY Farmingdale. But then I was kind of an early pioneer in the internet teaching world. I started doing a program for Hofstra, and then I started my own. And I also taught for Writer's Digest online. I still teach occasional courses for them. So I was an early adapter, and what I loved was the fact that I was getting students from all over the world. I wasn't confined to a specific geographic area, and I kind of developed these courses that that I teach today. My online class, my online school is called nextlevelworkshops.com. And at the moment, I'm not having any classes. I keep promising myself for the next 4 or 5 months because I have to focus on writing a sequel to the book that Viking is bringing out next summer.
What title is that? Do you have a title on it?
That's called A Dangerous Fiction, and it's a mystery about one that I think you'll enjoy. It's about the publishing world. It's set in the publishing world, and it's about a literary agent who develops this very, very malevolent stalker. And it's a fun book, and they felt that it could become a series, so I need to focus on, yeah. So once again, I come to the crossroads, and all else is sacrificed to the writing, but I put off the classes for the next 4 or 5 months. But I am always looking for really good, serious students, so anyone who's interested should contact me.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah,
how can people contact you, Barbara?
The best way is through the website, barbararogan.com.
Okay.
Or through my teaching website, which is nextlevelworkshop.com. There are contact pages on both of those websites.
No, I just thought of when you said something, you know, you just said BarbaraRogan.com. I gave my own wrong address, not my wrong address, but I did MarshaCasterCook.com is my address now because I put everything together. It got so confusing. And I'm listening to it, I'm thinking like, oh, my God, I gave my old address. You know, the old address. I'm doing this because when they look for me, they'll just find me then. And they do find me, but everything I do, they don't know. And it's so much easier this way. And that's why with World of Ink Network, my site goes into Virginia's, you know, and hers goes into mine because it gets confusing, you know, if you have a lot of different sites and things going on. So everything, it's BarbaraRogan.com, and they can find everything you do there.
Exactly. That's a sort of a central area. And then, you know, there's all the other stuff that you do these days, like Facebook pages and so on.
Yeah.
I don't do Twitter. So far, I've held the line at that. But I do blog now also. I have a blog called In Cold Ink, and it's all about the publishing.
Well, we actually are having a show with a young woman that's doing they're doing my Twitter account, and you know, and she's coming on October, the first week in October, I think, and
mm-hmm.
I'll get the date before we leave, and to teach people, she's showing people how to go on Twitter and what they need to do, because Twitter really is, I mean, Virginia, wouldn't you say Twitter, I mean, it's really good.
Yeah, we do a lot, with World of Ink and Stories for Children Publishing with Twitter, and it's we have a really strong following through there. Yeah, it's very beneficial.
I know, it's a very good tool. I'll catch up with it at some point or another.
I know.
You're like, I have too many irons in the fire. I have to.
That's one of the reasons we have hired this, you know, because this way it's a lot easier. And my Twitter account for my Madison Montgomery character, that needs to be all updated. And it really, you have to get the right people with Twitter. So we're, you know.
Yeah. The trouble is that writers are anyway given to procrastination, and these are wonderful tools for further procrastination.
I love that you just brought that up, Barbara, because it kind of, you know, because it reminds me a little bit of what we were talking about before the show, too. I mean, you know, we were talking about some of the best ways authors can spend their money, and you know, yeah, it's great to do Twitter, and it's great to do Facebook, and I mean, we do the World of Ink tours, and so people do the, you know, the virtual tours, the blog tours, they hire publicists, But you're right. I mean, a lot of that, when they get so focused, I think, on it, that, you know, it does become basically an avenue of procrastination to not sit down and write their next book.
Right. Of course, if it wasn't that, it would be, you know, computer card games or something.
But a lot of people are doing that, and I guess it's maybe to relax themselves, but, you know, but in reality, because once you get on, start doing social networking, it's not 10 minutes. It's like 2 hours later, and then because you start reading one thing, and then you read another thing and another thing, and it's like, oh, my God, where is the time? And I start doing that, like, and by the time it's 2 o'clock. Nice.
I started my blog about 3 months ago, and I have been absolutely astonished at the amount of work that I've had to put into that. I think I could write a book a year in the time that I put into writing this blog. So it's kind of a crazy thing, but you know, I hope it'll be helpful and prove worthwhile in the end.
I did post it out there because you have an article on a lot of things that people would need to know, the one you were focusing on. I mean, this wasn't a show. This was a long article. We're not talking like a little blog.
They are. That's my problem. And then I'm also obsessive about anything that I see published in my name, including blog things, so I have to edit it 16 times. But I try to find stuff that will be useful to the same people that you're addressing on this blog radio broadcast, and that's writers and aspiring. Excuse me?
I'll post it again, too, because it really is. You know, you have a very in-depth. I mean, this is not just a little blog. This is a long.
Thank you.
With a lot of questions answered, you know. And, these are questions that, you know, I think one of the things that Virginia and I always find out is that people don't, you know, it does take time to learn all this. I just didn't learn everything I learned, like, yesterday. I mean, it takes a lot of years. And I remember, like, going to the library, sitting there, taking every book I could, sit down and read about screenwriting to learn how to do screenwriting. You know, and Sid Field was great, and that's how I learned, but I started reading everything I possibly could. And one of the things is now everybody thinks they could just go, okay, fine, I think I'll do a screenplay, but it's not, it's hard. You got to learn how to do these things, and you have to be patient, and your first several attempts might not be really great. But that's okay. Just keep going on. And they stop. What happens is they stop.
Yeah. Well, or they self-publish, which is how a lot of books end up now, that in the past would have been a writer's first or second attempt that never got published. Most published writers have written at least one or two books that didn't get published. I don't know many who didn't.
How long is the time now? I mean, it was so long before. That's one of the things about self-publishing. You can do a book, and it's out the next day, like, practically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
How long is it now? Is it taking from...
Well, it can take...
The minute they sign the contract.
It depends on where they want to place the book in their calendar. So they can physically, they can do the book in a year. Sometimes they'll schedule it longer than that in advance if they want to get it on a certain list. My book is coming out, I think, a year and a quarter after they signed it, because that's the list they wanted it in. So it varies, but it's certainly not a day. it's a long process.
Yeah, right. And that's the problem, though, is because people, you know, don't want to wait that long, because this is a kind of world now where 1, 2, 3, if it's not done, we move on.
There are huge advantages. Sorry, I was just going to say there are big advantages to publishing with a publisher that make it worth waiting, in my opinion. And one of the things is that the book doesn't just sit stagnant during that year. It's being edited. It's going through three or four different stages of editing. They're doing promotion. They're sending out advanced reading copies, lining up reviews, sales. You know, they do a lot during that period so that when the book comes out, things can happen.
That's what I wanted to address is because it seems like, and I mean, I'm not knocking self-publishing by any means, because, you know, I do editing within that realm, and Halo Publishing is a self-publisher. But, you know, that's the one thing, that the reason why I work with Halo is because even though they're a self-publisher, you don't send them a book to them, and they don't just take it just because – you're going to pay to have them publish. I mean, they actually put you through a review process. They actually put you through an editing process. So even though it does happen within 6 months to a year, so a little bit, you know, faster than a traditional publisher, they're not like most, how most people think of self-publishing. But I think of, you know, a lot of the people who do, you know, create space towards, you know, they're an author, they write their own book, and I'm not knocking people who do this. I'm just saying there's such a huge handful of people. I think they're so impatient because exactly what you said, they worry about the rejection because they don't have thick enough skin to deal with it, or they don't have the patience to wait with somebody who's going to, you know, take more time with them, you know, be a traditional publisher or even a self-publisher like Kayla, who does take time and make sure that it is a right fit for them. And then if it is, you know, go through, you know, a little bit longer process before it gets self-published. You know, they go to CreateSpace and they basically whip up this manuscript, have like a couple of friends read it, or maybe a critique group go through it a couple of times, make a few changes, and then put it up. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
And then they wonder why it doesn't sell. And I'm going, because it doesn't work that way. You know,
well, actually,
it'd be great if it did.
They recently there was a survey done by Talist Magazine that studied sales of self-published books and found that those that were edited sold significantly better than those that aren't. But even beyond the commercial aspects of it, the way writers learn is really through good editing. I'd say that's the most useful thing, that and writing a lot and reading a lot. But good editing is the one thing that you have to get from somebody else. And that's a process that, if it's skipped, it's really to the writer's detriment. So,
definitely. That is right. And that is what has made self-publishing such a... If you get edited and you're self-published, you've got 100% chance of people really liking your book and getting somewhere. But eventually, and certainly now with everybody giving reviews to everybody else, they put that in there. So, you know, it's best to get an editor to review and see what's wrong, you know, and whenever you don't think it's wrong, an editor goes with the red pen or whatever, and, you know,
To me, it's not just correcting the book. It's that a writer who's really open to learning is going to learn from an edit and probably not make the same mistake next time, or at least maybe make it but then notice it and correct it. So that's one of the ways that writers learn and grow, and there's a lot of instant gratification in self-publishing, but that's one sort of inherent problem, that temptation to put work out before it's ready, that I see in that field. But that said, I want to add that I'm very excited about the advent of self-publishing and the tools that it gives writers and the effect that I think it'll eventually have on traditional publishing, or mainstream publishing, as I should call it.
I think it will, and you know when I let's say my book is edited, okay, and you know the editor that I have, which is Jeff Fleischer, he's edited all my books. He is an editor, okay, and he's many other things. He's really good, but you know, and what he does, he doesn't only do the grammar. He looks for content, and see, that's the thing. It's not just where the comma is; it's the content.
Mm-hmm.
Does it flow? You know, and he'll ask me questions, and I'll sometimes go, like, why did he ask me? Then I'm going, like, well, of course. And then when it's all done, I realize, yes, it needs to be that way. But, you know, he asks me questions and say, because he's reading it, like, I may know this, but my reader will not. So he'll say, what is the reason for that? And what are you planning on that? And is your synopsis, this is not what it is. And that's what you need, though. You have to have somebody that does it, not just sits there and puts a red pen and does, you know, your caps or whatever and your commas, and, you know, that's not, you need more than that.
A lot of writers don't even know what they need. They don't realize good editing is, and they think that it's just what you said, which is basically proofreading or at best copy editing. But yes, in a traditional, you know, in a mainstream publishing house, you go through different layers of editing, including first content editing, where they look at the characterization, the flow, the structure of the book, the big picture items, and then only later do you really look at the language of the novel, and that's a different person usually, and then you get proofreading, which is what most people think of as editing.
Yeah.
Well, Barbara,
so
I like what you said. I was going to say, I like what you said earlier, too, about...
you know, it's when writers work with editors, you know, even if they're self-publishing, they hire editors to
mm-hmm.
go through the work, you know, because they're taking it more seriously, and so they're not just
right.
whipping it out within like a week and then like publishing it. You know, they're actually taking
right.
the months to
right.
to hone the book before they self-publish it. You know, for whatever reason why they chose to do it, be it more royalties or if they really believe in the book and they just, you know, got 150 rejections and just totally
mm-hmm.
disagree with that. You know, whatever the reason.
Right.
But, you know,
right.
my husband and I talk about this a lot, and I was recently just talking to another author friend of mine, and I love the part where you said that, you know, and you literally said it this way, you know, authors who are willing to, you know, work with and learn from, the, you know, from those edits, because I
mm-hmm.
find as a freelance editor, because I have a lot of people who hire me to do, you know, exactly that, do the content editing and, you know, go
mm-hmm.
through that, make comments, suggestions. You know, I send it to them because it's always a two-stage situation, and they send it back to me, and then I'd go through and, you know, I say, yeah, that worked, no, that didn't, you didn't quite understand what I said here, and then, you know, so I give them maybe a little bit more direction, and then I also at that point go through and look more for the line editing as well, and then
mm-hmm.
send it back to them and let them go, okay, you know, we're done, you know, here's what you need to work on so they can, you know, move to their next stage as they, you know, get their manuscript honed for publication,
mm-hmm.
get traditional or self. And I have had literally writers come back, like, pissed off at me. And I'm sort of thinking, what the heck? I'm not trying to make you mad. You know, is there miscommunication here? And my husband said it perfectly one day to me, and so did this author that I was just talking to the other day. Like, yeah, they want, you know, that confirmation that their book is just so wonderful, and
yeah.
that they're paying you. And so they're paying to hopefully get that, you know, that pat on the back, and I'm coming at it exactly what you're saying, like an editor should be coming at it to help them learn.
Right.
And I think sometimes that's why we see a lot of people, and I'm not saying it's why everybody's self-published, but I think that's why there's a lot of people self-publishing, because their skin is not thick enough to realize that
it's
a corrective criticism. It's not
yeah.
a personal attack.
I think that the ability to learn from criticism, from good critique, is, and good critique includes what works as well as what doesn't work, but that
right.
ability is one of the essentials of making a life as a writer, certainly a living as a writer, and also perseverance. It takes a long time.
Yeah.
I just had a student publish a book who worked on that book for 8 years and wrote it, rewrote it, triple rewrote it, worked with me as an editor, worked with other people, and just kept at it, and at the same time kept submitting as well. And she just sold it to Random House. But I'm not saying I wish 8 years travail on anyone, but that's
yeah.
what it took her. That's what it took her. And the book that she ended up publishing, it was infinitely better than the book she started out with because of what she went through with it and all the rewriting and all the good input that she got along the way.
Yeah,
you know,
and I
know,
agree.
I
agree, too, because, you know, I have a picture book that's out and I actually just won a Mom's Silver Choice Award, which I'm very excited about. And, you know, when people
congratulations,
me,
that's something.
Thank you. I was very excited to get that. Honestly, it's funny, people, and this is how humble I am. I sent it in with the whole attitude of, this is probably a total waste of my money because it's not going to win. The fact that one is like a complete shock to myself as well, because you know, I know as a writer you should believe in your book, and I do believe in my book. I just honestly, you know, it's my first book, so you know you don't expect.
But it's good though. But it's a good
you know, it's
book.
Like your first,
I mean,
yeah, thank you, Marcia. But you know what I'm saying. You never even when it's your first published book, I can tell
mm-hmm.
you. 15 books from now, I'm going to look back at that book and go, it's awful, because it's just
oh,
what happened.
Yeah. You know, I'm right now experiencing that because I'm working on a book that is going to be re-released that I originally wrote 20 years ago, and I've learned a lot from as a writer since then,
yeah.
and it's
right.
it's unbearable. I'm rewriting the book as I go.
Yeah, so that's why when I say that, you know, like I didn't think it was going to win, it's just because it's my first picture book, but, you know, I love my book, but I realize it's also my first book, and I still have a ways, you know, I'm going to always be learning, and I'm, you know, so I was shocked
well,
it won the award. I'm very happy it did, but.
I think that's a great attitude for a writer, and apparently other people think very highly of the book, so congratulations.
Yes,
thank you. Well,
you know, it's a lot of writers. Yeah, a lot of writers I found. Go ahead.
I wanted to say really quick. Go ahead. Really quickly,
no,
right there. So I wanted to continue on that really quick, though, is what I was going to do. Is the book, I took the Institute Children's Literature Basic Writing course, and that was
mm-hmm.
actually for my very first assignment, the story idea. And I took that
mm-hmm.
course back in 2005, and the picture
mm-hmm.
book didn't get published, you know, from that original assignment until 2009. So I want people to realize that even if you're not writing a novel, even picture books take a long time to evolve
yes.
to something. You know, and I'm glad,
yeah.
and I'm glad I took that time because artists, you know, it won a if I would have submitted the very what I actually did as my assignment, I can guarantee
mm-hmm.
you would not have won that Silver Choice Award in any part.
Right.
Regard.
Right.
So,
you
what were you
changing.
Say, Martha?
You know, I can like in a screenplay, I can change a sentence like 20 times till I get the right sentence and it sounds right to me.
Yeah.
I'm very fussy that way. And you know, I think that when I used to hear people say, "This is a wonderful book, and this is definitely you need to have me as your agent because this I'm going to make you money." As soon as they say that, I already know I'm in trouble. This is not going to be a good book. You know that's what, I mean, as soon as they say how fabulous it is, then there's some I know usually what's happening next. Because, you know, if you're there, it just isn't, you know, and I also am a writer, so I know this, you know, and it's
yeah.
like, I think people actually, and one of the problems with self-publishing, I self-publish, but one of the problems is that I think a lot of people that are self-publishing do not know how hard it is and how much you have to do, and they just write something and put it out there, and it's not going to happen, because, you know, people, readers, even, you know, readers, even today, it doesn't matter. Readers still like a good story, you know, and if you've got a lot of mistakes and plus your story does not flow, the reader will find that out.
Yeah, but
I
think it's
humble.
But it's, on the other hand, it's a good tool for people who just have a story that they want to write and they don't care if nobody beyond their immediate family and friends reads it
yeah.
and they don't sell more than 100 copies. Then it's sort of like a hobbyist thing. It's like people
yeah.
who show their pictures
yeah.
in a park, and that there's nothing wrong with that at all. And there are a lot of good applications for self-publishing already, and I think eventually there will be
right?
more.
Yeah, I think so.
But,
there are. And that's one of the things that you were saying in your notes, you know, in your blog, and what you were talking about when they asked you the questions you have here. The questions
yeah.
people are asking you are about things like that, but mostly one of the questions that is the hugest question that we get all the time, query letter. How important is that query letter?
It's very important. It actually is very important. The agents get so many submissions these days because it's so easy to submit. Most of them take email submissions that they're completely drowning in them. So they're not going to go any further than the query letter unless the query letter captures their interest. So it really does matter a lot. Fortunately, there's a lot of information out there about how to write a good query letter. There's
yep.
some on my website, BarbaraRogan.com. If you look at the Writer's Lounge, there's an article on writing good query letters, but there's a ton of other information that's available to writers. So, yeah, it actually does matter a lot because
right.
you want them to read pages, and then you have to believe if you're submitting, you should be really convinced that those pages are going to represent you well, and if they do,
right.
they'll ask to read more. But first, you've got to capture their attention with a good query letter.
And how long should it be? I know the answer to that, but how long should it be?
Well, the standard answer is one page, and that's still, you know, kind of true. On the other hand, when you're sending an email, it's not so obvious what one page is, but I would keep it real short. One of the things that they, first of all, they have to read a million of them, so they appreciate someone who can write well and economically and not just ramble on. And second, it shows that you can write economically and still engage the reader,
right.
and that's a sort of a test. If you can write that letter well enough, then they're going to be interested in seeing what else you can do.
Now, what
well,
about people that have? I tend to this one. This one is one of the most that we get. Now, if people have their books and they self-publish them, will regular publishers actually give them a shot to at least look at their books now, or should they just forget it and go on
well,
to something else?
They should, for the most part, they should go on to something else.
Okay.
The only time a publisher would look at reprinting something would be if it had the kind of commercial success as the 50 Shades of Grey or whatever it's called, where it's phenomenal. And so they, of course, they're willing to take a ride on that. But for the most part, and I put this question to an agent who I interviewed on my blog, they don't want to see work that has already been published. They want to see new work.
Okay.
So once you self-publish...
I'd say that makes sense too. I know a lot of authors are going, well, I can name a couple of books that were self-published that later became traditionally published, but I know a lot of those books, it wasn't because the author contacted the publisher. The publishers stumbled upon it and saw big of a
Had. Yeah. Or take somebody like Amanda Hocking, who did an absolutely phenomenal job of establishing herself in self-publishing.
Oh my God.
Then got a great publishing contract.
Right.
But that is the direction that most people go, if they can, is from self-publishing to publishing, because it gives you a lot of advantages. On the other hand, I'm starting to think that some of the smartest people are the ones who learn to combine the two worlds of publishing and self-publishing. So that's still very much developing, and I'm interested to see where it's going to go.
I love that you brought that up, because we had an author, her name's Hope Irvin Morstein, and she writes both in the young adult and the adult genre, and she's a nonfiction writer. And she has over 35 or maybe it's almost 50 books now traditionally published, but she has a couple of books just because of the because they're focused on a specific, you know, time frame that like if a publisher picked it up and it's a book that involved 2012, kind of, I know 2012 was over, I'm just using this as an example, but 2012, so a traditional publisher is going to take too long to publish it, and she just got the idea. So those kind of books, she's actually going to self-publish, but she's been in this industry long enough that she realizes, like you said, how to look at one of her manuscripts and say, this one should go to a traditional publisher, this one, because of the time constraint and getting this out into the reader's hand based on what the material is, I need to do this way. And
right.
So it's been interesting.
A lot of writers also, some writers are starting to publish short fiction online, as e-books rather, and because publishers aren't set up to publish novellas really.
I was just going to say how I've done that now. I've never wrote short stories, and I am loving this. It's such fun because I'm in the romance world, and I'm taking my screenplays and using my characters, and it's like fun, and it's like 30 pages, and it's like lunchtime, you know, romance stories. People really like it because the iPad. It's fun. I never wanted to do anything like this, but that is what a lot of people are doing, short stories now.
Because they really lend themselves well as to e-readers, you know. They're a nice, convenient length, and you don't have to pay the price of a big book.
Right.
Well, would you say, too, Barbara, that this is also, maybe something, you know, for somebody who wants to stick mostly with the traditional route of publishing for, like, you know, their bigger, longer books, as a way to build their fan base and marry the self-publishing world into, you know, like you said, you know, doing both? Because I mean, when Marcia started doing this, I saw the fan base possibility here with those.
Well, that's what a lot of writers are trying to do, aspiring to do. It's difficult now because there are so many books out there. There were something like 220,000 self-published books this year, twice as many as the year before. Next year, I'm sure there'll be twice as many again. And there's no reliable way of weeding the good ones out of the many bad ones. And until that develops, I think it's a difficult way to go, because you not only are you undertaking all of the tasks of self-publishing, which means that you have to learn about marketing and promotion, and you've got to pay for an editor, and you've got to get expert design and so on if you want to do it right. But it's taking you away from writing other books as well. So right now that seems to me a route that's not for everyone. If you happen to be a very entrepreneurial person with a bent for marketing and a strong fan base and you know, a big Twitter following, maybe you're in a better position to do that. If you write very fast also, because you've got to put a lot of product out there and keep churning new books out.
Right,
some people
can
do that, and self-publishing can be great for them. But for most writers, I don't think it should be the first choice anyway.
Yeah.
Not for most fiction writers.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people will vehemently disagree with that. There are some very strong, passionate advocates of self-publishing out there, and I see the application.
I am one of them. I am one of them only because I do know that I had unbelievably great writers when I maybe 5-10 years ago. Really great. I mean, their stories were fabulous. They gave up, and that was a shame. And so and at that time, maybe I'd say 8 years ago, if you self-published, you were just, you couldn't, that you're done. I mean, I used to tell people, if you self-published, forget it. You're over. You know, but
that used to be true. It's no longer true. Not true anymore.
Right. Exactly. And that's why I did it myself. I had children's books. I couldn't get them published. And then now people love the children's books. But I found a good publisher that self-published, Fidelity Publishing. She does all my books, and she does an honest, good job, and she helped me along the way. She told me what to do, and I actually listened.
Yeah, Fidelity's another one like Halo that it's not. Yeah. She just takes the book and just puts it out within a month. I mean, she takes her time.
And she helps you. And, you know, and the thing is, she's a graphic artist. She helps you with the cover. And, you know, I mean, I myself, now that I did my second romance, I went out and I'm looking for a cover. I went through thousands of photos to find a cover that I felt fit my character, you know.
How long did you spend doing that? You know, but you make a great point. For somebody who's tried and who has a really good book and who got, let's say maybe even got close, because a lot of writers, they'll even get literary agents, and then the agent can't sell the book. That happens too, which is quite heartbreaking, because when you get an agent, you think you're there.
There are a lot
of good books that fall between the cracks, and
I'm
glad that people have an option to get them out there. I just think the industry is still in its infancy, because until readers have a way of finding those really good books, a reliable way, not through Amazon reader reviews, which we now know are quite corrupt and rigged. But a reliable source.
Let me ask you a question about that, okay? Because this comes up on so many shows.
I agree
now,
with Barbara.
Yeah, the reviews, I mean, honestly, the reviews, you know, I really think if you have 10 or so good reviews, that's enough. People say it's not. They go for hundreds. I cannot imagine that someone is going to sit there and read through all of the reviews to get a book. I mean, I don't think I would read 100 reviews,
I would say to that, Marcia, is when you talk about, you know, the authors that are pushing, and a lot of them are usually self-published authors, and I'm not knocking self-published authors by any means, because my picture book is self-published too, by the way, but when you're pushing for, like, to get, like, the 50 likes and the 50 reviews or 100 likes and 100 reviews or beyond that, most of the time what ends up happening is you have the author's friends, family, coming in to get those numbers up. And that's what I mean by it's rigged. It's not honest people who discovered the book who are honestly just writing about the book.
Right. Plus, as we now know, there are venues that will write reviews for pay. You know, so you can actually purchase reviews, which really renders them meaningless, since the reviewers don't even read them.
Okay, but let me ask you, we had Kirkus review.
Yeah, that's another topic for us.
You know, the Kirkus, we had Kirkus reviewers, you know, on the book. And not, well, we had Kirkus, you know, the company, they came on. And, it was a really good show. And it actually, to be truthful, I'm not going to spend $400 for a review. But actually, by the time she was done, I actually felt it could help somebody, because they have so many people coming into their website.
Well, Kirkus reviews is a little bit different, I was going to say, because Kirkus, besides doing a review, they also help with some of the marketing, because they also, you know, really promote the review that they wrote for you. So part of that money goes toward that you pay for when
it
you do.
It was $400. So and
yeah.
She was great, though, wasn't it? It was a good show. I mean, but
yeah,
it was
$400. And I know a lot of people do respect Kirkus Reviews as a paid review, you know, for a
yeah.
site where you do pay to get a review from. But and this is kind of where I know Marsha's going with this is being someone who used to do reviews, having Fran Lewis, you know, who's a part of our team who does do reviews.
Yeah.
I mean, she puts a lot of work into her reviews and is
paid. Oh, my God, yeah.
And she
yeah.
gets, you know, from self-publishers to the big publishing houses contacting her to do reviews. And, I mean, the hours and how long, I mean, they're like in-depth
yeah.
reviews. Like they're almost like a book critic type review because, I mean, she really
yeah,
gets into about the character,
will be on again.
The plot,
yeah,
everything.
I mean, all of them, right? All the publishers are contacting Martin. They're all contacting
yeah.
her
and
she gets an honest review.
Yeah, and I'm starting to think when you're spending, and I could say this because I've been there, when you're spending, you know, 4 hours of your day, 8 hours of your day, and I'm not just saying just, you know, reading the book and then writing the review, then posting the review on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Smashwords and Goodreads because, you know, of course, you know, the publisher or the author wants you to put it everywhere so they can,
right.
you know, show this review. You're not getting paid to do any of that, and it's so, I mean, it's like your whole day is gone by the time you're done. So I kind of look at the reviewers, and I understand where they're coming from. You know, being on that side of it and going, you know, paying them, I get not paying to have them give you a positive review. But I think paying a fee for their service to post the dang review everywhere is not too much
mm-hmm.
to ask because it's a lot of dang time.
Yeah. It is a lot of, it takes a lot of time to review a book. My reference was to reviewers who don't even read the book. There was an
right.
article in the New York Times
exactly.
recently
right.
about a service that was just shut down a little while ago, but they would farm out reviews for $3 a review to people who were never expected to read the books but just wrote something generic and full of praise and posted it on all of those sites. So there's a lot of chicanery that goes around with the Amazon readers' reviews. I do read them sometimes because some of them are informative and good, and those are usually the ones that rise to the top anyway.
Is
but,
that what it is? Okay, because I read the top one. Wait, is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah, they do. Amazon highlights those ones because I've checked on books that we've toured and even on my own book, Babysitting Sugar
mm-hmm.
Plums. And I've seen that the ones that are highlighted by Amazon as like the top reviews that people find most helpful are usually ones
right.
that tell people actually read the book. But here's a
yes.
question for you, Barbara, because, you know, and again, it goes back to the whole, you know, even issue with self-publishing, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly from the, you know, wonderful out there. I mean, I just kind of wonder when we may, I mean, no one can predict this, but it just seems like with e-books, self-publishing, you know, print-on-demand on such a huge uprise. And then, of course, you know, you have all these, you know, really positive, you know, someone like, you know, Fran doesn't charge. I'm just saying someone, you know, who does do extensive reviewing like Fran but says, you know, hey, I'll do the review. I'll send you the review. Then you can do what you want with it versus, well, if you want me to post everywhere, this is my fee for that service, you know, kind of thing.
You know, I do a lot of shows with Fran, and these authors, I mean, everybody loves her, and I'll tell you exactly why. She gets the book, even if they're so complex and different. You know, well, she's a reading expert. She worked, you know, there for 36
yeah.
years in New York. So, I mean, she's had, you know, a lot of practice in doing all this, and she's read over 600-700 books in the last couple of years. She's a speed reader, and she's unbelievable. But actually, she gets every detail, which is amazing. You know, because when reading a book,
well,
you don't usually.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I was going to say. I mean, so I'm just kind of wondering, in this kind of climax that we have kind of happening right now, I'm just kind of wondering, will there ever be, I do, I look at the future sometimes, just wonder, will there ever be a time where the dust will settle and people say, yes, it's okay to self-publish because as long as you're self-publishing with, you know, someone like Fidelity or Halo, who, you know, is a reputable self-publisher who just doesn't spit books out. I mean, they actually take the time to look at them, to work on them, edit them, perfect them like a traditional publisher does, except that
right.
you're paying for the service versus them, you know, taking on the cost to do it. You know, yes, it's okay to pay, you know, someone like Kirkus, because you're not paying them to give you a good review. You're paying them to spend the time to post this dang review everywhere for you versus you having to or to hire a publicist to do it for you kind of, you know, scenario. I'm just wondering, I mean, will there ever be a time where someone where we'll have enough people looking at the industry and saying, yes, you know, there is this happening and that's okay. You just have to be careful because there are the shady, you know, sharks out there.
Well, I don't know. I think that in order to evolve, the there have to be some outlets for review that are independent and trustworthy to the reader.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are some blogs that review self-published books and do a good job of it, but you have to really seek them out. I don't think that... there's yet a lot of crossover to the mainstream where you see self-published books being reviewed in regular media outlets. So that, where do you learn about books, really, these days? I still read reviews. I read the New York Times book review. I get recommendations from friends. And I read about books on blogs from you know, people that I respect. So I think that eventually there will be some way to distinguish the really good books that are out there from the sea of ill-considered ones. And when that happens, then there might be sort of a merging of the two worlds, and publishing and self-publishing become like two sides of the same coin. Right now it's still difficult, I think. It's early stages in this industry.
Yeah.
It's only existed for the past 10 or 15 years as a real force.
Right. And, you know, and even I would say in the last 5 years it's a lot better, but it gets better each year, but it, you know, it's got time to go. But it's still, you know, because there are some really good writers, and that's the thing, but the truth is there are some ones that are really not very good writers, and they need to really work at their craft more. But the thing is, they're selling very well, and so they're not. That's how they look at it. They're selling well. They have good, you know, fans that want them. And so, but I think eventually that will change. I think the public will, you know, eventually say, no, these are really not that good. And we really want good literature, and, you know, and we want good movies from books. I mean, you know, this is there's a lot. Could change, but it,
yes,
should be
it is changing.
Yeah.
It is changing. I mean, like you said, it used to be the kiss of death to have self-published anything, and now it's a perfectly respectable thing to have done, and nobody holds it against you. So, things are already changing. Or you have something like Viking Publishers bought Author House, which is a self-publishing company.
Right.
So there are all kinds of strange things happening in the industry, and I don't think anybody yet knows how it's all going to shake out.
Yeah, I think a lot of, I think that's what's going to happen. They'll probably go in with some of the traditional publishing, and they'll probably, but the trouble is, though, I think a lot of people might think that if they're with Author House that they'll get into Viking, but that's not going to happen, I don't think.
No.
If their books are great, it'll happen, but they're not going to put it together. They're just not going to do that.
No, I think that it would be completely separate.
Right. Yeah, I agree. But a lot of them will probably start doing that because this is a very, very big open market, and some people are doing really good, and they have great books. I mean, I've seen them. They're really great. And Fran has had several on her show that are unbelievable, you know, but you have to, the one thing that the self-published author has to do is they have to continually write. You know, you can't stop. If you stop, your book goes right down. You have to show people that you can keep coming out with a book.
Right. That's really important for self-published writers, is to keep writing and keep putting out new books. You've got to keep, like, pedaling the bike for it to keep going.
And I think, you know, on that note, we should say, you know, I want to say where they can reach you again at BarbaraRogan.com, and you will, you know, you answer your emails. And
absolutely, yes. I do. And the other website for people who are interested in writing and studying the craft of writing is nextlevelworkshops.com.
Next level.
Yeah.
Right. My daughter started talking. I'm sorry.
Okay, and your book, and your next book will be out. Well,
my next book will be out in July of 2013, and nobody's going to remember this then, but it's called A Dangerous Fiction.
They will, but they're going to know it, and it's really good to know. And it's great, you know, the e-book market is huge. So when books go on the e-book market, I mean, it really is. It's a huge avenue now. You know,
it's huge. So I'm so happy about this that my last three books were just re-released as e-books and in paperback by Simon & Schuster, who brought them back. I'm extremely happy about that and grateful. Because now there's like a whole new generation of writers, of readers who may be able to discover them. I think they're really fun books. They're mysteries, and one's a ghost story and a mystery. It used to be the greatest dream, I think, for any writer, and really for me, was to see all my books in print at once. And that was a pipe dream. People in the industry said, unless you're one of the top 100 best-selling writers in the country, that will never happen. And even that would be a lot. But now every writer can see that happen, and that's, to me, that's great. Great for writers and great for readers.
Yeah. And I think my opinion is it is open for writers now. It's so much better, but there's a lot of problems. So that's why we talk about this a lot, and you have this in your article too. I mean, you know, you have to be careful that you do not get ripped off. And Virginia and I, every show we do, we talk about that because, you know, if you have a question, you know, ask somebody because I have seen some people really, they come to me after they've already spent like $10,000. I am like sick from that.
Yeah,
so, I mean, if you have a question, ask us or call us or email us, whatever, to find out if we know anything about it before you do it, before you sign on that dotted line, and don't even get a copy of your book, no less.
Yeah.
I'll say, and if Marcia and I don't know, we have between the two of us, such a huge contact list, you know, obviously, because we have Barbara with us today on the show. I mean, there's people that we can, you know, reach, and if they have time to get back to us, can, you know, let us know if we don't. So, and that's valuable in this industry.
That's why all three of us here do what we do, because we really want people not to have that problem, because it's really, it does bother, I know all three of us right here, bother us a lot when that happens. But there's nothing we can do after the fact. We can help you before to try to get you to some place. But not after you do it, because it's always happening.
Well, there's a people who have written a book sometimes are so eager, so desperate almost to get it out that they make easy prey. When I was a literary agent, half of my job was persuading writers that they didn't actually have to give the rights away for free. They were entitled to royalties and even in advance. That was the most common conversation we ever had. So somebody has to protect writers from themselves, which is a lot of what literary agents do.
I love this part that you said, you know, where writers give their rights away, you know, basically for nothing to free, because, you know, that's what happens. They get those contracts, and I think if they don't sign the contract the way the contract's written, then they don't get the deal. And it's like, you can negotiate that contract. Just because they give it to you in black and white doesn't mean it has to stay in black and white.
Well, I try to tell people sometimes, certainly with movies, I try to explain to them they need to get a lawyer, because you do have to, you know, I'm not a lawyer, you know, and when you get into a lot of different things with international rights, and when you get into, if you're writing a script and you want, you know, all these different rights, you have to make sure that you are getting everything you should get. When you sign on the dotted line, it's over.
Yeah, somebody who actually has an offer for publication in front of them should seek advice either from a lawyer or from a literary agent. I've known a number of writers, including one student of mine recently, who got an offer from a publisher and turned around to some of the agents that she'd contacted previously and said, I need help with this right away. And within a day or two, she had both an agent and a publisher. So there are smart ways to handle it.
I've seen a lot of content, and I say to them, I wouldn't sign. I really wouldn't.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, but they do sign, though, anyway, a lot of them.
Yeah, well, but contracts these days are so complicated also that you really need an expert to go through one.
Oh, my God, my options for a movie, there was 12 pages. I mean, I'm okay, but not on 12 pages of things. It's really,
I've actually had movie contracts for books of mine that were sold or optioned, and they're hefty, you know, volumes, those contracts.
Oh, yeah.
And the rights that they take on the very first page, it says that you are giving them these rights for perpetuity in the universe, in the not just the solar system, not just Earth, but the universe.
Right. Right, and every single thing. So you have to be careful. You do, because, you know.
Yes, you do.
Then once it's done, and if you get, you know, and if it gets very popular, and, you know, then you say, why did I do this? Because they knew what they were getting. They
right.
knew. You know, so I, on that note. But thank you so much for coming on. It's been great that you've been on, and we really learned a lot.
Thank you.
And you really have told people the things that we tell, but you have been doing this for years, and I'm really thankful that you came on the show. Virginia?
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
And take care, okay?
Yeah, it's been great having you, Barbara. I mean,
we hope you'll come again. Look, when your book comes out, call me, and we'll
I will.
Okay?
No, thank
we'll
you.
Okay. All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Virginia?
Yeah.
All right.
Here.
All right, you have no show on Monday, I know that, right?
No, I really don't have any shows happening. I should say none. I mean, I do. We have Families Matters, which is always on the fourth Wednesday of the month. So we do have that show. I am working. I'm actually talking to an author / illustrator of picture books who has, you know, besides being writing and illustrating books, has worked with traditional publishers and has also dealt with self-publishing as well, and has really gotten down some great tips for people interested in getting a picture book. So picture books right now is such a tough, tough market. People think they're the easiest book to write, and I can tell you, being somebody who has written a picture book, that is so not true.
Yeah.
I think it'll get
hard. Time, but it's right now not. You know, it's just not. You know,
so I'm hoping.
You know what we have on the 13th? Fran has a great show on the 13th. She has Peter LeCourt, and he did Eight Is Enough. He produced a lot. Cagney and Lacey, Eight Is Enough, Remington Steele. He's great. He's on the 13th.
Yeah. So, but the picture book show, I'm hoping that won't be the Family Matters show, just so everybody knows. Family Matters, we're still picking our topic. I'm just hoping I can get that author on. So I may have a show on a Monday this month if we can figure out a date that works for him and for myself to have him on. But, so Family Matters will be the fourth Wednesday. And then I know J.D. Holiday has and Christy Condoleto
on
also
the 14th.
Have,
yeah.
On the 14th, yeah. They have it's Storytime Gather Round, which is always a great show. And you know, just because it is early for those on the Pacific side
of the kids, for the kids, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is early. I mean, because it's 10. I think it's 10 a.m.
Kids are up anyway. They're up. And
yeah.
Up.
Well, no, my kids wouldn't be up if I wasn't living in California, because I'm only an hour ahead of Pacific time. And, but you know,
but they can listen to it
about our shows.
It's done great.
They can listen to it later on demand. Yeah.
The show's done great. Because it's really, there's nothing like, I mean, it's good. Your kids can actually listen to the show, and it's not about us talking. It's just a straight show with
great
a book.
Reading. Yeah, this is fabulous.
All right, well, have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
And this is very interesting.
This is great
because these are the questions that people need to have answered.
Yes, and then anybody who is a fan of Stories for Children magazine, the back-to-school issue is going to be going up on this coming Monday, which is the 10th of September. I can't guarantee it'll be up first thing in the morning, but I am. It will be up on Monday sometime before 8 o'clock at night. So just keep checking sfbmagazine.com, and it'll be up there. I always send out tweets anyway, but that will be our last issue, so... But, yes, everybody have a great weekend.
All right, you too. All right, take care.
All right, bye-bye.